Call the meeting to order. It's 9 o'clock. Welcome to our fellow regents and welcome to the staff, attendees, faculty of the university. This is our fourth quarterly meeting, December 11th, 2020. We're conducting it via Zoom. I want to extend to each of you the greetings of the holidays. I hope you have a safe and rewarding, refreshing holiday period. Stay safe, and thank you very much for all you do for our university and camaraderie and the fellowship that we all enjoy. With that being said, I'd like to call on Dr. Shane Spiller so that we may administer his oath of office and welcome him officially as a regent to the university. Dr. Spiller, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
We'll get you to raise your right hand, and I'll read the oath, and you can acknowledge. Do you solemnly swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the Commonwealth, and be faithful and true to the Commonwealth of Kentucky so long as you continue a citizen thereof, and that you will faithfully execute to the best of your ability the office of member of the Board of Regents of Western Kentucky University according to law? And do you further solemnly swear that since the adoption of the present Constitution, you, being a citizen of the state, have not fought a duel with deadly weapons within the state nor out of it, nor have you sent or accepted a challenge to fight a duel with deadly weapons, nor have you acted as a second in carrying a challenge, nor aided or assisted any person thus offending, so help you God?
I do.
Congratulations. Welcome. As part of the tradition, the rich tradition of the Board of Regents, we will have a regent's pin for you. It commemorates the fiduciary responsibility and privilege that each of us have to our university serving in the role as a regent. So, sorry we couldn't do this in person. Strange times, but welcome aboard. Congratulations, and we look forward to a rich time of serving with you in the upcoming months and years ahead. Congratulations. Next is the roll call, and I will call on Secretary Brinkley to conduct the roll call.
Regent Bale, present. Regent Ball,
present.
I am present. Regent Edmonds,
present.
Chair Hinton,
present.
Regent Henson,
here.
Vice Chair McKinney,
here.
Regent Milliken,
here.
Regent Nichols, Regent Spiller,
present.
Regent West,
present.
Mr. Chair, we have 10 regents present representing the quorum of the board.
Thank you, Secretary Brinkley. We are officially conducting business at this point. Recently, you had minutes of the third quarterly meeting of August 7th, 2020 distributed. Do I hear any additions or corrections to those minutes? If not,
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that the minutes be approved as written. Submitted.
Regent Bale has moved.
Second.
Regent Brinkley has seconded. Are there any other comments, discussions, or questions? Hearing none, all those in favor, please raise your right hand. Opposed, like sign. We have unanimous approval. Today's meeting is the format of a consent agenda. I'll read our normal statement to announce the procedures. The committees of the board met on October 23rd to discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for action. Item FB number 4 was not presented as an action item at the committee meetings and shall be removed from the consent agenda for further discussion and a separate vote. At this point, we will start into our committees, first going to Academic Affairs. Chair Bale.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair Hibden, and let me welcome Dr. Spiller to our committee. We're happy to have him aboard. And I'm going to offer up the first two items on our agenda for consent. I think we have an addition to item 3, but as discussed at our October 23rd meeting, we have action item A1 and A2 before the board. Provost Stevens is with us, and if she wishes to make any comments about any of these since then, Cheryl, please weigh in if need be.
No, actually, they are as presented at the committee meeting, and so I think we're good to go.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion. Do I hear?
Second.
I have a motion from Regent Brinkley, and I think a second from Regent Ball. Any further discussion or questions? If not, all those in favor, say, raise your right hand. And anyone opposed, set like sign. Okay, those items are approved. Provost Stevens, I think you have an addition to our appointments.
I do. I have one additional faculty member who has been recommended for a merit appointment, Dr. John Thane, who is a professor in sociology and criminology. Dr. Thane has spent his entire career in WKU. He has served the university for 47 years, and his work has been in the area of juvenile delinquency and juvenile justice. He has served the community for civic engagement, working with juveniles and fragile families. So he is well-respected in the community and at the university, and we recommend him for this honor as well.
Great. Thank you. Anyone have any further additions to that?
No addition, Chairman Bell, but if I could add just a note here and say, as I look at these Meritai appointments and part about their accomplishments, I'm honored to say I've worked with many of them. Three of these on this list I consider to be mentors. These faculty were crucial in building who we are at WKU. And I think it's important to recognize that WKU had many retirements and others leave this calendar year. And we didn't get to celebrate their time here and the work that they did like we normally would have, because these celebrations were not possible during COVID. But we are grateful for their time with us and the work they did, and we wish them well.
Thank you. Very nice comments. Anyone else? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Have a motion from Regent Spiller and a second from Regent Ball for approval of the Meritai appointments as presented. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Anyone opposed, like sign. Motion passes and the Meritai positions approved. Mr. Chairman, we have a short agenda on our academic committee, but let me do make a comment that Provost Stevens and her cohorts have been working very hard recently, putting budgets together for next spring. And also on the SACS, this material that we will talk more about at January's committee meetings, particularly some of the new regents who may not be familiar with the SACS process and how important that is to the university. Without it, we don't exist. So with that, I will turn the meeting back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Bell, and much appreciation to the Academic Affairs Committee as we look back over the past year of the work that's been done and the challenges with the restart program and et cetera. Thank you for what you've done. The next committee is the Executive Committee. There are two items that have come out of the consent agenda with recommendations of approval. First, is there any region that would like to have an item removed from the consent agenda and addressed separately?
Chair Higdon, I need to abstain from EX2 because of a board conflict. So if you would just separate that vote, it would help me out.
Thank you. Any other comments? At this time, hearing none, we will look for a motion and a second with the understanding that Regent Brinkley will be abstaining. Do I hear a motion for approval?
So moved.
Dr. Second. Bell has moved. Regent West, your box is lit up. Are you seconding?
Yes, I am.
All right. Good morning.
Sorry.
Thank you very much. We have a motion and a second for approval of executive items 1 and 2 with Regent Brinkley abstaining. All those in favor of approval, raise your right hand. Oppose, like sign, passes unanimously. Again, we have a short agenda in the Executive Committee. That concludes the Executive Committee agenda for this morning. Next, we move to Finance and Budget. Chair McKinney.
Okay, thank you. The first three items are consent agendas, FB1 through FB3. Would anybody like to separate any of those items out for individual votes? All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda.
So moved.
All right. I think David got the motion.
I'm happy to yield the motion to Regent Ball and take the second.
Okay, there you go. All in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. The additional item that was added to our agenda is FB4, the approval of the line of credit with Truist Bank. Susan, do you have anything you'd like to say about that?
No, not really. If you remember right, we brought it as an information item to the Finance Committee. As it turns out, we started setting up closing, and bond counsel asked that we get an action item from the board on it. So nothing has changed about the terms. Still a $10 million unsecured line of credit. Again, nothing changed from the terms. It was just bond counsel thought it best that we actually get a board resolution. So I don't know if Andrew Anderson has anything to add on that.
Yes, Susan.
Okay, so that's really it, Regent McKinney. It's just basically some dotting I's and crossing T's.
Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions about the line of credit? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve those people.
So moved.
Kirby, I believe that was you.
Yes.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, thank you, Jan. All in favor, raise your right hand. All opposed? All right, motion carries unanimously. That's all we have for the finance and budget.
Thank you, Chair McKinney, and a great shout out to the Finance and Budget Committee, who likewise has had a vigorous agenda for the past year. And as always, another vigorous agenda for the new year as we go into it. Next, we move to Student Affairs and call upon Chair Henson for our Student Affairs Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rigdon. Good morning, everybody. It's good to see everybody's faces. Looking forward to seeing you all in person very soon. Ethan, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Well, welcome to Ethan. How are you?
Doing well, thank you very much.
And I believe you have some visitors in your conference room.
Yes, ma'am. I am joined today by Dr. Lynn Holland, our Assistant Vice President for Student Life and Dean of Students, and Sharon Hunter, our Parent Family Programs Coordinator and Assistant Director for Housing and Residency Life.
Did you start with your presentation?
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to request the opportunity to share the screen. It's the only thing that's holding me back. There we go. Chair Henson, to the Board of Regents, President Cavoni, thank you. This morning, from the Student Affairs Committee, we wanted to provide an update and information to share with the group about a couple of things. First, an enrollment update for the spring, and then secondly, we'd like to talk about some of the two initiatives that are currently involved in our student life area of the division of the institution that we wanted to highlight for the board today. So I indicated today that Dr. Holland and Sharon Hunter are both with me, and they'll both highlight our additional programs. I'll give a quick update on spring enrollment. Spring enrollment for 2021 is relatively flat in the context of what we're looking at, total enrollment of the institution. You can see that there's a variance there, about 60 students. The good news here are twofold. One, this is a very good position to be in budgetarily in terms of we look at modeling, but secondly, we have some time yet to realize more enrollment and registration. We get next week, this next week, of staff working on trying to engage with students who have yet to register. Overall, registration parameters or participation is consistent, especially across current and returning students. Where we're a little bit deficient in terms of year-to-date comparison are in some of our at-risk areas that you might expect to find some challenges. One of the things that is really highlighted this year was online delivery. Students who were totally online in their engagement this fall are a little slower to respond to the registration action as their current students who are continuing students or upperclassmen, and those students who have more in-person or direct contact with the institution. This makes sense in the context of this. The isolation from the community, they're maybe not as aware of the registration theme that is prevalent during a registration period. But some of our other students, summer scholars, are underrepresented students or low-income students are performing a little bit less than in terms of registration. So these are our targeted areas. And our freshmen. So if you think about students new to the campus, new to the institution for the first time, they're not necessarily consistently aware of the cycle of registration and return. So these are our areas that we're really working on. We're working on that through all of our access points, housing and residence life with our current students who are still on campus. I think about 1,400 students who are on campus. the students, so in those students who have left and not returned, we're staying in contact with them for most of the time. Our parent portal, which we'll talk about here in a moment, is an access point for parents to engage with the institution and allows for us to share information with them. They're an ally and a partner in the conversation about helping maintain our students' awareness and engagement. We put out a direct mail piece this week to remind students about registration, and so they're going to receive a holiday card that will be a subtle reminder to register for the spring semester. And our advising center and our colleges advising are all actively engaged in reaching out with our institution students who have yet to register for spring. Overall, our retention rate of our total enrollment of our class is consistent. So this is fall to spring retention or persistence rate. We were 74.4 in 2020, we're 74.3 right now. So truly we're flat in terms of our engagement. We have opportunity for growth over the last year, near our enrollment growth over the last year. So that's what we're really trying to work on, is trying to capture that last segment of registration and enrollment of students. And that's going to be our push year end, and then we'll return in the spring before the beginning of the term. Any questions about enrollment that I could address?
I'll make a comment, and for those that have looked at the latest edition of the trusteeship piece of material that we get from AGB, you know, it shows that enrollment nationally is down pretty much everywhere, about 4% for public four-year colleges and overall. So I think the fact that we've increased enrollment this last year and are keeping flat is pretty good, and they do warn of that demographic cliff that we talk about so often and how important it is to be doing the things that you're doing right now, Ethan, to keep us ahead of the curve.
Thank you, sir. We're going to stay the course, and we're going to keep us in a good position. So I appreciate that comment, sir. I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Lynn Holland, our Assistant Vice President Dean Students, who has worked with us this year on the cultivation of the Student COVID Task Force to mirror the Institutional Task Force. And to introduce this task force and Dr. Holland, we have a little video
This is representing the Student COVID-19 Task Force in the city of Portland.
Community athletes, non-athletes, people who have different majors, different colleges.
Senior Maya Peoples says she was nominated for the task force by her advisor for Black Women of Western, one of several groups she's affiliated with on campus.
We come together in time with you, like a focus group for the Waterboro campus, so people know what's going on in individual groups through the eyes of the students.
Will Downing, president of Phi Delta Theta, says the task force is looking for ways to motivate and encourage students during this unusual semester.
We all have the same goal of staying on campus and not just being able to stay on campus and kind of for it to be a day-to-day survival thing, but for students to have a positive experience.
Being 6 weeks in with all these restrictions, people says it's become more important than ever to provide support.
For the most part, I feel like everybody's at the point where they have masks. They don't want to wear the masks anymore. They're still doing it, but it's not as fun, it's not as cool.
Yes, I would think, wow, how much longer? Well, we don't know. We don't know how much longer, and as a result, we just gonna do it.
Meeting once every 2 weeks via Zoom, the task force members offer feedback and strategize different messages, encouraging students to hang in there and stay the course.
I mean, they were home for months, and that does something to your health, that does something to your spirit in a way, and I think just to be back with their friends and the people that, you okay with them, as they are following the rules.
This makes me for the hill. I may be big enough. Great video.
Colleagues, good morning.
Morning, Lynn.
How are you today?
Lynn, how are you doing?
Excellent. It is my privilege today to share additional information about the Student COVID Task Force. And as I mentioned in the video, they are a phenomenal group of students representing the four corners of the institution. And I'm excited to share a little bit about the rationale for creating the task force, but then also some of the initiatives that we've engaged in this particular year. So the task force itself is designed to help serve as trusted advisors. These are individuals that have assisted us in reshaping the restart plans as we've needed to. They've also functioned as influencers out in their respective corners. So that emphasis on both, on the three areas of informing and educating, and then helping us create an environment for the student body to empower itself in order to assume personal and professional shared responsibility for mitigating the spread of the virus, but also for living and working and learning in health on the Hill. Several of the initiatives that the task force was involved in this semester. So we have the Healthy Hilltopper Pledge, which all students and faculty staff were asked to take. The students were helped us create that particular pledge. We were able to enlist their help and support in that. They also helped us create social norming strategies and social norming messages so that we could help students understand the importance of complying with the initiatives that we set in place in our Healthy on the Hill. One of the things that's critically important for this particular group was communication and communicating in a way that was bi-directional, in the sense that we provided information to the task force. They were able to take that information about things that students were struggling with. For example, what's the difference between quarantine and isolation? We were able then to scope that information into a social media campaign in addition to targeted email strategies and provide that information with students. So the particular thing, the emails went out weekly, and every week we vetted those emails through this group of 20-some students to help us determine that the message was a good message, that it was solid, and that it would be received well with language that students would acknowledge and recognize. In addition, they were able to bring information back to us to say, this is working, this isn't working, here's where we need to increase information sharing, here's where we need to back off on some things. So that was exciting too. This information, though, just didn't stop with students. And so my colleague Sharon Hunter will spend a bit of time talking about the parent and the family portal and its role in bi-directional communication. Good morning. I am thrilled to be able to join you this morning and to talk about something that has been active on the campus for the past 8 months, our parent and family portal. Why a parent and family portal? 62% of parents in the latest Buffalo Mobilevitz survey said that they wanted information about their student and their school biweekly. So this portal was set up, and my thanks to my boss, Mike Riegel, and Housing and Residence Life for affirming my thoughts that this was something that we desperately needed and funding this initiative. This began on April 13th with 377 parents to test our concept. As of this past Monday, we have 21,900 plus parents and others who have joined our portal and to get information about WKU. In the last 6 months, we've had 4,500 plus join. So we are thrilled that this has become something that others are sharing and continue to want to participate in. And a shout out to our family here from 2019. I must keep my parent and family hat firmly attached here. One of the primary means of communicating with our parents is newsletter content. This is a chopped up example, but it gives parents information they want to see. Healthy on the Hill, we had an email from a parent, and they said that the thing they wanted to see primarily in their newsletter was our COVID, our reporting information. So we made the change to feature this prominently. It's the first thing every family sees on their newsletter. The next thing we provide is upcoming events. These are family colleges. We also partner with admissions. An example here on the screen for the Northern Kentucky Parent and Family Outreach. And we also link to registration. So when a parent is in their newsletter, they don't have to leave or do anything else to get to that event. We also share with them national articles before your student leaves the campus, which they do. And, of course, we let them know about the housing application opening up for the 21-22 academic year. The interest has been sustained as of November 1st. This is our information on newsletter success. We're at a 50% rate for every community, but if you notice, even at this early stage, our prospective families have an open rate of 88%. And then there are 52% of them are clicking on a link, information, or action item we've included in that newsletter. Our first-year families, 53%, and the SINs are the optimum thing there. We're over 22,000 items that we have sent out to them over this period, and they're still at a 53% open rate. We're right at 500,000 SINs since April, which has been amazing. The other thing that we do and the information we provide to our parents, our new Border Tuition Scholarship Program. The portal doesn't create information. We provide an easy access portal, no pun intended, for parents and families to find information. We sent that out to 4,600 parents and families with a 59% open rate. So we have information, and they are taking us up on that information and reading it. Enough of me talking. Let's take a quick tour of the portal. You're ahead of me because I can't see that screen.
Screen is not
changing. Yes. This is like driving someone else's car. Okay. We're going going to say that I'm going to drive and you're going to watch the side of my head here. Well, this is going to be interesting. I'm typing and looking at the television screen for those of you who have done this before, and it is the most. Yeah, the other screen for me. The portal works much better than I do up here, Green. Please.
Are y'all seeing the screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Julie.
Welcome, Karen. You're doing a great job.
You are doing a great job.
Yes, my my sisterhood.
That's right.
Well, the good thing is that parents don't have as difficult a time because we have them pretty much preloaded, and they can go into this portal with email, Facebook, or LinkedIn on their phone, tablet, or any other device. It just doesn't work when you're driving your dad's car. And you're going in. Okay. Here's the pretty stuff. This is what the portal looks like. We have the Healthy on the Hill information that every parent said they wanted. On the right-hand side is an event calendar. We host events for colleges, organizations, the administration, and, of course, the academic calendar. We also have information, our first-year village and new residence hall. That's the number one point of interest for our incoming families. Resources so that they can easily get to what they're looking for. And then everyone sees financial aid and scholarships because that's the number one barrier in question for families is how do I afford college? And we want them to make them aware of everything WKU has to offer. The other things we do, and I'm going to go through this rather quickly, is we have on-demand content where families can go in and view a video on how to renew their FAFSA. So that is easily obtainable for them, and it's on-demand. If I have a FAFSA question at 2 a.m. in the morning, I can do that. The other thing that is really cool is they can share it with their student with one click. If I want little Julie to go in and look at how to renew her FAFSA, I send that information directly to her. And the beauty is, it's from mom and dad. It's not from the institution. So they're going to open that up because I've said it's important to me and I want them to take a look at it. I'm going to go back to the news feed. The other thing is, this isn't a set portal. The families are able to pick the things that are important to them. They do the communities they want to join, which is vetted content for them. Every student of color is automatically enrolled in the multicultural community because they may not be aware of what we have available for them on the campus. So they click in, we talk about diversity, inclusion, equity, and the other thing is there are comments. Parents can comment on anything to ask us a question. And they know that the answers they're getting back, and this is a diversity page, but the question was about financial aid. It did not matter what they wanted to know. There was a place for them to ask that question. And then when we answer back, we're so cool, we get a check mark that says, this is a verified person. The information you're getting is correct, and it's from someone you can go back to. And I am going to, communities. We have everything we can think of for parents and families to look at.
WKU News. If there's a news article, we feature it on the portal. They don't have to subscribe to anything. We feed it to them. Student success, career development. We created that community that has over 2,700 members. When a family member said, I need to know more about internships, how do I get to that information? We put it here. It exists. They just didn't know how to get to it. Athletics, LGBTQ, prospective families. First, fourth, alumni. We have over 700, almost 800 alumni families who are getting specified and specific information about that experience for them. So each one of the colleges, and then orientation. I am going to stop there for now and say that we have 15,000 newsletters going out every 2 weeks. We have information that is available for them, and I encourage you to go to wku.edu/parents and sign up for a portal account. We'd love to have our friends and others take a look and then let us know what they believe we need to add. So with that, I'm going to stop sharing. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Does anyone have any questions for sharing?
I'll comment. I think that's one of the best presentations we've had in a long time. Great presentation.
I agree, Bill. Sharing that portal is just fascinating. Really nice.
It is.
Really nice. I can see that it keeps people engaged.
It does. Well, I hope to see you all on the portal, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Sharon. Dr. Logan, you get to follow that fabulous presentation. I don't know if you're up to it or not. Are you?
I cannot. No, I have been outshone by some wonderful folks here, and I'm perfectly happy to be to me. Thank you, Dr. Holland. Thank you, Sharon, for that. These are two strategies that we have in place to effectively engage and try to support our students in this period of time and be COVID. So not just for prospective and new students, but our current enrolled students, especially the task force, who were peers, engaging peers in conversation and support, encouragement during the COVID crisis. And then it pays dividends to have the connection with parents, not just in prospective parents for new students, but also for our current students and the support and the communication that they have enjoyed through this portal. So these are two programs which I think are wonderful, and I think that are doing great work to enhance the experience for our students, especially during the pandemic. So thank you so much, Chair Henson, for the time, and we appreciate it. If there's no other further questions, thank you.
I'd like to just give a comment before they leave, because as someone who was teaching in a classroom, three different classrooms this semester with, I had 130 students or so in the halls, it was very obvious the amount of communication that had been done to make sure the students knew what the expectations were going to be. And so the partnership between the students and the staff was excellent to create an atmosphere. And we didn't know what that was going to be like going in. There were a number of people who were concerned about what the students' expectations and behaviors would be, but the student behaviors were phenomenal. The classrooms were great, and I put that down to communication. So thank you to Dr. Holland and everyone else who was involved with that.
Thank you, Regis.
I'd like to make a comment on that, too. Obviously, Dr. Holland and Dr. Logan and their people have done a wonderful job. One of the other unsung heroes with our great success this fall with regards to the virus has been a guy named David Oliver, who has been the point person on campus with all of our testing. And I'll also give a shout out to our president who was involved in some of the weeds of that. And we've had the virus raging all around us in Warren County, and yet we managed to get a semester in with really great results. And so it's been a team effort all across the campus in terms of mitigation and containment, and kudos to everyone.
Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Logan? Thank you, Dr. Spiller and Dr. Bale, for your comments. Chair Higdon, I believe we are finished with the report from Student Affairs.
Thank you, Student Affairs. Lively report as always. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
I always had the best committee, or the best group to work with.
I'm not going to touch that. Next item agenda is the President's Report. President Kimoni.
Thanks, Chair Higdon. Everyone, thank you for your participation and getting us to what is the final day of final exams for the semester. What an interesting year it's been. I'm so thankful for the way in which our entire community has come together to help us get to this point. I would give a brief overview of kind of where we are in our strategic plan implementation process and a little bit of looking back. In my notes, it says we're about halfway to the halfway point. That means we're about a quarter of the way through the 10-year strategic plan. This is our roadmap for where we're headed as an institution. It is our North Star. It guides us each day, and we continually refer back to it. But it also is a way in which we hold ourselves accountable. You all have received the list of 15 metrics. There are some sub-metrics within that. That is a subset of an even larger group of numbers that we pay attention to during the course of the academic year. And today I will highlight for you four important accomplishments I think that we've made in four important areas, and then we can have a conversation around the rest of the metrics. I want to thank Bruce Schulte, who is our Associate Vice President for Strategy, Performance, and Accountability, who serves as the point person for not just in collaboration with institutional research for collecting these metrics, but also at making sure that we're holding ourselves accountable. You all will recall, those of you who were on the board, in fall of 2017, we began our work together as a community to think about where we wanted to go. And Bruce Schulte, along with Paula Potter and our College of Business, co-chair of that effort for the university, and I continue to be ever thankful for that work. During the summer of 18, we put the final finishing touches to that plan and really unveiled it in the fall of 18. So for about 2.5 years, we've been working with the plan, using it to guide our efforts. This is an apt time, given all the work that we've done, to pause and to reflect a bit. Got this driver here. There's the slide that I was supposed to be talking off of. One of the things that I do think is important is that this is a living document. We take snapshots that are points in time, but we're consistently referring back to what we've assembled for ourselves to make sure that we're going to be in a good place by the time we hit 2028. It feels like a long period of time when you say 10 years, but given how quickly the 2.5 have gone, particularly in the context of a pandemic, I'm really pleased with the progress that we've made as a campus. You heard Regent Bale mention some of the national numbers around enrollment, and higher education is challenged nationally. Our enrollment this past fall, partially due to the pandemic, is down 4.4% from the year before. Public 4 years were down about 1.9%. But that first year freshman class for this past fall nationally was down 13%. And so we are fighting pressures imposed upon us by externalities, by pandemic, demographic shifts, affordability challenges. And it's one of the reasons that I am so proud of the work that our community has done to bring in the first-year class for fall of 2020, the class of 2024. Our fall 2020 undergraduate degree-seeking enrollment was down just a bit, about 50 students. That's overall enrollment, which is 11 times better than the national average. COVID obviously posed significant challenges to higher education. It will continue to pose significant challenges, But you see some of the creativity and innovation that we're bringing to bear on the relationship development and pipeline creation, not just for students, their families, for current students, for alumni, to grow and deepen the engagement that we have. We did see more growth in the first year class this year than we have in the past 30 years. We were up 406 students, a 15% growth rate. And we're really proud that we brought in this class with the highest GPA in WKU's history, a 3.44. You'll remember the conversations we had last year around ACT score and why it is we might reward 4 years of work instead of one day of testing. We think that, coupled with a continued aggressive marketing effort around affordability and focused recruiting strategies has helped produce this result. And we're going to continue to push. That 3.44 GPA is important. I have folks who've asked the question, well, doesn't doing away with the ACT compromise quality? And the reality is the best predictor of success in college is high school GPA, the best predictor of first-year success and ultimately graduation. And when you think about a 3.5 student in high school, that's an A student, exactly the kind of young people that we want to be part of our community. Our scholarship program rewards that high school performance and also is an important lever as we shape that class, right? Because it's not just about recruiting. I don't care about recruiting freshmen so much as I do about us making sure we're recruiting future graduates. We want every young person that we admit to leave here with a degree in 4 years. And that goes brings us to retention. Nationally, the retention rates have improved about 1.7%. Our first to second year student retention increased 6.9 percentage points from 2017 to 2020. That puts us at about 70% of the way toward that 10-year goal that we have in just 3 years. Now, caveat that we, in the midst of COVID, we've made some strategic decisions to help people continue with us despite perhaps either financial or academic challenges. But I think it's important that we're being intentional and focused and strategic about the way we're addressing students' success. And we've been talking about what it means to be a student-centered, applied research university focused only on the success of our students and making sure they get to graduation. I think these metrics help bear that out. Our URM, unrepresented minority retention rate, jumped 15.2 percentage points. And so how do you do this? This isn't just talking about retention and doing a better job at helping our students return. This is about, at a granular level, creating programmatic innovations that we implement around targeted groups. So you think about the work that we've done with our Summer Scholars Program, how it is we built the ISEC Academy, making sure we have the Birch Institute reaching out to first-gen students, thinking about how it is we can target through the Opportunity Fund grants that help students who have emergencies that otherwise would force them to leave. Everything that we do is focused on getting that student from the first semester to the second semester to the second year, and on to graduation. And I'm proud of the work of our staff and our faculty during the past 3 years to get us to this place. All of which leads us to the reason we're here. The reason we all get out of bed in the morning and think about WKU, and that's graduation. Our six-year graduation rate rose to 55.1%, the highest six-year graduation rate ever at WKU. Our URM and low-income students had the highest graduation rates in 8 years, and we had more than 3,000 bachelor's degrees awarded, which is a record high for WKU. Again, focusing not on recruitment of freshmen, but recruitment of future graduates, crucial for our success. And then on the access and opportunity side, we announced the WKU Opportunity Fund at my investiture, which is almost a little less than 3 years ago. And in those 3 years, we've raised toward the target of $50 million about $45 million in new scholarship resources. We've created 129 new endowed scholarships that help to support our students. And all of that goes into our new freshman scholarship program for this past year. We doubled the number of young people who received merit aid from the previous year. 84% of our incoming class received automatic merit awards, really helping to make us more affordable and more accessible for our institution. And we think that that is we're an outlier in a good way, because roughly half of students attending four-year publics typically receive institutional aid. Our work to grow voluntary support to support our young people has been extraordinary. As our nation undergoes a reckoning around race, we continue to focus on being an inclusive campus for every person. We had the second highest score among Kentucky's public universities for diversity and inclusion. We're proud of that, but we're not there. We want to be number one. We restructured our diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts across student affairs and academic affairs to bring those two silos together, and really proud of the work that Molly Kirby and Michael Crow are doing there, really to integrate the student, the staff, and the social with the academic, the faculty, to bring those two things together. We know that for us to be successful as an institution, every student we admit must be part of the WKU family, must be included and participate fully in the WKU experience. And we continue to push forward on that with the We Are One WKU initiative, which we announced this past summer. Looking ahead, we announced earlier this fall additional scholarship innovations for next fall's class, including the Hilltopper Guarantee, our commitment to students from the Commonwealth, guaranteeing 100% tuition coverage in the fall of 21 for students who receive Pell Grants and have a 3.0 GPA. Again, continuing to push on students who need that extra assistance, who might not see WKU as being in their future. I've talked several times about going to the neighborhood across the railroad tracks. If you look up from that neighborhood, which is a half mile away from campus, you see this shining university on a hill. Those are some of the lowest income families in our community. And I want those young people to know, and I want them to hear from the president and everybody else in this community, if you get a 3.0 in high school, then you can go, and you're Pell eligible, you can come to WKU tuition free. Incredibly important innovation to meet our promise to those students, their families, our 27 county region, and the whole Commonwealth. Two of the other initiatives that we launched that I want to pay particular attention to is the WKU Family Scholarship. This provides for WKU families, folks who've had parents or grandparents who graduated from WKU but don't live in Kentucky. We're providing to them in-state tuition for the first time this fall, no matter where they live. And so trying to get those young people back to the Hill, competing with their local flagships. There's an alumnus in Orlando whose daughter would have loved to have come to WKU a couple of years ago. She wound up at that state's flagship. But with this, we would have been incredibly competitive with the tuition program. So I'm making sure we make good on our commitment to those that have already been part of our WKU family. And then thinking about the seven states that surround Kentucky, making sure we're being ever more aggressive. We've talked since I've arrived about the importance of Nashville to our future. We continue to make important inroads in that community as it is continuing to boom just an hour south of us. The Border State Scholarship provides in-state tuition to all first-time, full-time students from those seven states, and they're eligible for merit aid. So you see the growth that we've had in the freshman class. We're challenged this year with recruitment that is probably delayed but not deferred, to use Vice President Logan's words, making sure that we're able to land that class and continue the great positive momentum that we've built in the past several years. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the tuition incentive program. For those students not in the seven states around us, those who have a 3.0 GPA, we're going to reduce that out-of-state tuition by nearly half. Last, as we look ahead, there are lots of things and accomplishments that are embedded in the strategic plan that I've not addressed. We'll talk about those. But the work continues. Our first-year village will open in the fall. as Sharon said, very, very important for recruiting that group of class of 2025, those freshmen who begin with us next year. We have two new residence halls that are pod-style living, but the entirety of that end of campus will be focused on living learning communities that freshmen experience and making the 150 hours that young people spend outside of a classroom as academically interesting and engaging as the 15 or 18 they spend inside of a classroom. You've heard about the success of our Opportunity Fund. Continue to be proud of that work. Our Commons will open at Helm Library next fall. We'll continue to see transformation at the top of the hill with the Garrett building coming down and Garrett Plaza being created. Also some other work on the top of the hill. And lastly, we continue to push forward and we'll accelerate work on the Innovation Campus just to our south, really taking the Center for Research and Development and expanding it and deepening its work with not just Warren County, but our 27-county region, focusing on supporting the entrepreneurs in that business engagement that's going to be so necessary for our economy to thrive after the pandemic ends. In January, we'll see our new draft of a master plan that we'll bring to the Board of Regents. There's a group that's been working really hard on that for years, and I'm proud of the efforts so far. These are the student metrics. You have others in front of you, but the reason you do a strategic plan is to bring a community together around a set of shared aspirations. And what I'm most proud of is the work not just to create the plan, but also to think about how it shapes who we are, who we aspire to be, and how we hold ourselves accountable. It's been an interesting first 3.5 years of my presidency. The community, our faculty and staff, have responded to challenges in a way that I think has produced great gains, great successes, and we have much to celebrate, and we're going to continue to have much to celebrate as a university. So with that, I'll stand for questions. Bruce Schulte is also available. He knows the ins and outs of this better than I ever will and can also be helpful as you have individual questions around data points and what other metrics we have available to us. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, President Caboni. Wow. For Regents that were all part of the strategic plan initiative and participated in the committees, how refreshing to look now a couple years into the plan and see those outstanding results, and no doubt the benefits that will provide our students and provide our university into the future. So as President Caboni has indicated, any comments or questions from our Regents?
I think we ought to have Bruce make a comment. Bruce and Paula did a fantastic job, and that was really a tough position for those people to be in at that time. So Bruce, weigh in here.
Thank you, Regent Bell. I appreciate the opportunity to say hello to everybody and wish everybody a happy holiday. It's hard to top an excellent presentation by our president, but I would just take a moment to not only thank Paula and all the committees that were formed to create the plan. We had over 70 people actively involved in that process and a whole lot more who weighed in throughout the entire year in which we developed the plan. And then with the implementation process, we not only have an executive committee that draws from all the major sources across campus, but a full committee that's helping us keep track of all the wonderful progress that we're making. We have a fantastic communication team that makes the information we provide to the president look as good as it did today. And the reason this is working is because the entire university is embracing the plan. We have plans being created at subunits and unit levels that reflect off the university plan, but also work to make those individual units work actively and be successful. And that's the only way this thing, as a plan, stays off the shelf and actively on the desk, open, is by everybody embracing it. And that's happened, and that also happens because the leadership believes in it and follows it. So thank you again. Happy to answer any questions and appreciate the opportunity to say hello today.
As a new regent on this board, let me just say that I'm truly impressed
by the progress that's been made under this plan. Somebody is doing a great job. It looks like everybody is. That's my only comment.
Thank you, Regent Milliken. We can say accolades about what our president has accomplished in the last 3.5 years. But more importantly, the vision that he's put into place and the direction he's taking us is admirable. And so the best is yet to come. And I think we ought to give our president and the strategic plan committee, Bruce and others, a congratulatory applause for the effort and now putting the rubber to the road and bringing this to our students. Anything else on the president's report, President Cabone, having to do with the strategic plan?
No, I hope the community will take the winter break as an opportunity for those who get a winter break. I always want to remind folks that while there is a space between the fall and spring semesters, there are always individuals who teach, and I never want to forget the groups of staff that stay here over the break to work on our facilities, to make sure the ice gets cleared, the rooms get painted, the things that need to get done that can only happen when people are away for break. There will be hundreds of folks working over the break to make that happen. And so take some time for yourselves, regents, faculty, staff included, to rest and rejuvenate. We have another semester ahead unlike any we've had before. But given the success of the fall, I'm buoyed and excited to come back in January and hit it hard again.
Okay, last call for any other comments on our strategic plan report. If not, we'll move into our last section of today's agenda, which is our other business. The first item that I want to discuss with the regents is the status of our internal auditor search. I'll get Jason teed up to help me with this comments, but as the regents know, we are in the process of finding an internal auditor. Christy Smith has been acting in that role on an interim basis and also has been working with a committee to identify a pool of candidates for our consideration. That committee has narrowed the potential prospects to 4 individuals, and just recently interviews have been scheduled with those 4 folks right after January 1st. Jason and I will be part of that interview, or will join the committee and be part of that interview process. As all of you know, the internal auditor is a direct report to the board and is one of our most critical functions as we undertake the responsibility of oversight of this university. Jason, do you have anything to add?
No.
Okay. So the process is ongoing with regards to internal audit. We will keep you posted. We're doing an extensive, deliberate, refined search, and optimistic that it will be productive. Any regents have any questions about those comments or observations regarding internal audit? Hearing none, the next item on our agenda was a discussion of a resolution that we would like to present to the board this morning. We will ask Jeff to read the resolution, and then, of course, you will see it on your screen at the same time. Jeff?
The resolution states, whereas the faculty and staff of Western Kentucky University made extraordinary efforts to maintain the quality and integrity of the WKU experience in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic, and whereas the faculty and staff have worked together to educate and support in as safe a manner as possible, and whereas the faculty and staff were able to quickly pivot to remote learning to allow students to complete the spring 2020 semester as the pandemic hit the U.S., And whereas, the faculty and staff, both individually and through the collective efforts of their governance organizations, worked with the administration to develop and successfully execute the Big Red Restart Plan for the fall 2020 semester, and whereas the faculty and staff, acting in the best interest of students, made personal and professional sacrifices to ensure the continuity of the WKU experience, and whereas the faculty and staff continue to exemplify the WKU spirit by exhibiting leadership, guidance, compassion, and flexibility in keeping the education and welfare of students as their top priority, therefore be it resolved that the Board of Regents of Western Kentucky University, in a meeting on December 11th, 2020, does hereby express its deep appreciation to the faculty and staff of Western Kentucky University. And be it further resolved that this resolution be spread upon the minutes and a copy thereof be presented to the Faculty Senate and the Staff Senate to symbolize the appreciation of this board.
Thank you. I would like to call out Regent Spiller and Regent Brinkley with the honor of placing before the board a motion for approval and a second. Regent Spiller?
I'd like someone to place it.
And second.
Thank you. This now time for comment and discussion. The job that has been done, the results, the community effort, and the hands-on approach by all the faculty and staff is much appreciated. It's always hard in these types of situations to define or find the words to say thank you and how much we appreciate the efforts of faculty and staff. But hopefully this resolution will convey to our faculty and staff the appreciation from our board for all that's been done and will yet to be done as we go into the next phase of our pandemic. Any of the regents would like to add or make additional comments, I call upon you at this time to do so.
Chair Higgins.
Regent Brinkley.
As many of you all know, I have a compromised immune system, and yet I am on campus. I'm on campus right now and have been for several months, as has many of our staff in public broadcasting, because it is a safe working environment, in my opinion. And I would not ask anyone to work in an atmosphere that I didn't myself feel was safe and prepared to accommodate people during a pandemic. We do have people deployed remotely, as we have since the 1st of April, and some of them will remain remote due to the nature of what they do. But I have been extremely proud of the students as well that have worked in our facility nonstop since March, almost every day. And I would point out that includes some weekends. And along with our student athletes, last night's televised game involved student employees of ours, and do several of our games. We have student employees that have traveled extensively with the teams, and will continue to do so and keep our operations going to keep us on the air. And we say this, and we have had relatively few instances related to COVID. None of our full-time staff have tested positive throughout this entire pandemic, although several have been coming into work. And I want to particularly call out the COVID task force, David Oliver, and the atmosphere that they have created, and the safety that I feel on this campus, and feel good about coming to work when necessary, and provide the services that we need. So I appreciate this effort as someone that is immune compromised, as are several colleagues of mine across campus, and I look forward to it continuing into the spring until we can resolve the situation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Regent Brinkley.
Chair Higdon, if I could comment as well, we started this in February, And in my department, and I know this goes across campus as well, we met every week through the summer, virtually, trying to figure out how to provide the best opportunity for students, how to provide the best environment, how to be committed towards providing them an education. And it was that commitment that led me to seek this regents role, as I saw how far my colleagues were willing to go to help students, to open that door for the opportunity for them. And they were committed to that, as Regent Brinkley said, at great cost to themselves sometimes. So the amount of work has just been incredibly impressive all semester, all summer, all year. So thank you.
Thank you, Regent Spiller. Anyone else? We have a motion by Regent Spiller and a second by Regent Brinkley for adoption of the resolution. There is no other discussion. All regents in favor, raise your right hand. Any regent opposed? Like sign. It passes unanimously. And again, many thanks to our faculty and staff for the efforts.
Chair Hickman, if I might make a point of information.
Sure, Mr. President.
For those of you who know, our faculty and staff have sacrificed not just with the extra work and extra time they've invested, but also given the uncertainty of last fall, have self-imposed and decided to participate in salary reductions. And when we began that, we said that we would remain committed to restoring those as soon as it was fiscally feasible to do so. And so today, I'm very pleased to announce that due to the hard work and persistence of faculty, the way in which we've reduced spending, our self-discipline on searches and positions, that all university-wide centralized salary reductions implemented in response to the COVID pandemic will end this month. And faculty and staff will receive reimbursement for the amount withheld since July 1. On December 18th, your paycheck will include your fully restored salary for December, as well as retroactive payments for salary reductions made from July through November. I can't tell you how remarkable the effort of this campus has been. We have work to do, but we're on solid financial footing, and I'm so thankful for the willingness of our faculty and staff to participate in a shared sacrifice to meet our mission. And so I'm really pleased to share that information. Chair Hagan.
That is outstanding news.
Chair Hagan, point of order.
Yes, sir. Regent Brinkley.
I would like to thank the administration on behalf of the staff of Western Kentucky University and know that this has been a priority. That I know you all have listened to my continued hounding and wanting this reversed. I appreciate, and I cannot say this enough, the hard work of people like Susan and Christy and Rebecca, certainly, and the president, that have gone into this effort and made sure that we could do this when fiscally responsible. So I appreciate this. Thank you on behalf of the staff, and we will work hard to represent the university in the coming semester the same way that we have through this crisis. So thank you all very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Regent Brinkley. Outstanding news. A true holiday spirit. A true Western Kentucky University family. Do you want to have anything else with regards to other business or comments for our meeting? If not,
I'd like to say I look forward to when we can all be together again. It's a little more difficult establishing camaraderie on a Zoom meeting, but hopefully that day will occur within the next 6 months or so. Bring on the vaccines, and everyone take a vaccine when you get the opportunity.
Good advice, Dr. Bell. Thank you. If you'll look at your agenda items, you will note our meeting schedule for 2021. Get those on your calendar. again, reflecting Regent Bell's comments, let's aspire that we'll get to do the majority of those in person and not to Zoom, because the camaraderie and fellowship of this Board of Regents and our institution deserves our attention. Anything else? We're ready to adjourn. Again, holiday greetings. Be safe. Enjoy the family. Look forward to the new year and meeting, hopefully in person with everybody in the very near future. We are adjourned.